major league team in a major league city. The new crew.
This is to us. This is to Columbus. This is what this is all about. Unity. Columbus. History. The future. The new era. The new crew. Let's get weird. Let's get weird. Let's get weird. And it's all because you guys like to drink beer.
Live from Awesome Town, Ohio, you are listening to the Massive Report Podcast, your complete source of news and information for your Awesome Town crew.
And welcome to it. It is a post round one playoff edition of the Massive Report, going into round two, which I'm happy to report we can say we're doing. Welcome to the show. We're brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company. My name is Matt Goshard. I have almost no voice from yesterday, so this is going to be super fun. Joined as always by Sam Fahmy, Greg Benson, Alex Stanek, and Morgan Hughes. I thought it was going to be Elliot for a little while, just because I thought somebody had given you a Snickers, but apparently that didn't happen. Yeah.
Are you like the new Morgan?
What's that?
Have you like taken the Morgan role of like being like the joke guy, like the Alex jokes?
The Alex
that
jokes?
Used to be like Morgan's thing.
Yeah, well, he's kind of slacked because he's kind of a horrible person. Also, we didn't turn his microphone on today, apparently. You got it now?
Syphilis. Yep, we're good.
Oh man!
We all have barely a voice between us.
The crew go to extra time against Montreal, an unneeded extra time, but it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. Get the result off of a couple of goals from Mr. Kai Kamara. yeah, see, this is bad. This
wow.
is this is like I literally am just fighting to have words escape my mouth right now.
If there's ever a reason to walk into traffic, Matt, this is it. Back to you.
Once again, we're off to a roaring start.
So Morgan can actually talk, so I'm going to go straight to you. Your thoughts on how the crew performed.
First of all, Matt, just really happy to be here. Thanks for having me in. Excited to talk some land sharks across. Cruisers, though, for sure?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
The thing that really stuck out, and I'm sure we're going to talk about players and, you know, specific goals and moments in the game, but the thing that stuck out to me that I really have been thinking about since last night is, do not taunt Greg Berhalter. And that's in reference to that gif I made. But two main notes about that. You knew Montreal was going to score.
Yeah.
You just knew it. They're too good to get blanked all night and into two extra time periods. The question was, I think, on everybody's mind in the back of their heads, how are the Cruisers going to respond? You know, and the answer was with the white-hot intensity of 1,000 burning suns at just the right times. There were plenty of moments and plenty of situations where lesser teams and, you know, poorly prepared teams would have curled up and died. There were dying moments there where you could have just said, that's it, we gave it our best shot. But they didn't.
Yeah.
They really didn't. They had been properly prepared for that game, and you could just tell. It was incredible. The second one was the substitutions were on point. You know, undue hate aside, Jack Mack and Mabwadi coming on, they were crucial in the second and third goals. Extremely well-played substitutions, extremely well-prepared team. And, I mean, Greg Berhalter, we have one of the best guys in the league at what he does in charge in Columbus, and my God, that happened to us last night. That never happens to us. That happened to us. Incredible, Matt. Back to you.
I was super excited about all of the goals. Ethan Finley's goal was very good. Kamara had two that were just on point. The one thing that I thought was really interesting, and reading about this after the fact, the referees at halftime told both teams that the Montreal game the Montreal goal should not have counted.
Yeah. They told both teams
that at halftime.
That's weird.
Yeah, it was in the on the crew website today.
Is that normal?
We
all heard about it after the game that they acknowledged it,
Andrew King's piece on the
MLS
website.
Like, they went up to both locker rooms, and they're like, just FYI, guys.
Our bad.
Dude, it was should offside. Still be 1-0.
Yeah. Sorry.
Which kind of makes me really, really want video review to get here for offside calls, but that in and of itself is a totally different thing. Alex, give me your thoughts on the game.
Well, I think we're going to go more in depth later, but I'll try to keep this brief before I'm going to try to not go into players. I think the overall thing is there were questions about mentality. Mm-hmm. You know, last season during the playoffs, I think the crew were not mentally prepared to climb the mountain that they had to climb against the Revolution. And this year, I mean, we had to make a big statement, and I thought, you know, this is going to be a turning point game one way or the other for the Berhalter era and potentially for this rebrand that we've had. You know, we had a chance to kind of relaunch this team, and if they relaunch it in a successful way, that's great, and if they don't, that's a problem. And they came out with the right mentality. I remember when Kai Kamara missed that penalty, the person standing next to me in the Nordeca said, we have to sub him off because he's not right mentally anymore. You know, this is a turning point. And I turned to him, I said, no, you're dead wrong. You know, Kai Kamara is the kind of guy that is going to make this right, and this team is going to make this right. You know, they're a family. I said this last week. These guys are like a family. You see it in the Instagram pictures. You see it in the way they kind of interact with each other off the pitch. They have the right kind of mentality as a group, and you know, I'm starting to get those vibes from 08. I'm really starting to get those vibes, and they made the statement they needed to make, and I think this team could go all the way.
Greg,
two things I want to bring up. First of all, I've been living in Columbus for not quite 4 years, coming to crew games for most of that time. And the energy at Mark Frey Stadium on Sunday night was far and away the most exciting, most cerebral, really. It was an adrenaline buzz just to be there. The crowd was really on point, and I think that lifted the team a lot. The main thing that stands out, though, for me is that the measure of professional athletes and a professional team is the ability to rebound from adversity. And we saw that play out last night. You know, Columbus went up so early in the piece that it was like you knew that the score wasn't going to stay that way. But you wondered for most of the first half, the crew was just piling it on and pressing and going for two and three. And by all rights, it could or should have been 2-0 or 3-0 after the midway point of the first half. To miss all of those other chances, then to have Montreal come back and score in the other direction, legal or not, before halftime.
Not.
They didn't, but it counted on the scoreboard. Mm. And the question from that point becomes, how much of a professional are you? How much are you willing to step up and rebound from this? Because it was just a momentum sucker. You could feel it in the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, everybody went silent. I had people coming over to the section that I was in the Nordeca saying, why are you guys so quiet? I couldn't even give them an answer because I had no words.
Yeah.
And to see the guys rebound from that was my biggest takeaway from them.
You know, we've had this rebrand. We don't have the hard hats anymore. We're not saying America's hardest working team anymore. But you look at the squad, and I would say this is America's hardest working team. You had guys like Harrison Offal, guys like Ethan Finley, who were running on fumes, and they were still giving 110%. These guys were running themselves ragged for the city, and it was so inspiring, and it was so uplifting to see these guys. I mean, I can remember watching Waylon Francis and Harrison running in extra time and just being like, how do these guys still have energy left? They have been playing for 2 hours. What is going on?
Yeah.
But there was an energy, and you saw it after the game. You had Waylon Francis come over and he kissed the crest in front of the section, and you had Harrison who was kind of getting up and Kai and all these guys. This is a really special team, and you know, we knew that they had the potential to be this all season. They showed that they're bringing that potential. They're fulfilling it, and so I think, man, I can't wait for the New York game. I can't wait.
It's gonna be difficult just sitting for 2 weeks and waiting for that. I mean, I want to I want the game to be tomorrow.
I do too.
I just want it to just be here at this point. And it's
I'm sure the guys' legs are okay with it tomorrow.
I think they're good with
everyone else. Kind of, you know, we're
a little
ready
bit
to
of
go.
A rest period. So one other piece of breaking news that I did just get right before we went on the show. Didier Drogba did get his sponsorship with Scott's Lawn. Because after kissing the grass for the entire match yesterday, Scott's Lawn decided to hire him as their new spokesperson. Seriously, what was up with his shenanigans?
Well, Greg and I were talking about this before the podcast, and I mean, again, okay, I know people are going to tweet me about this. I'm going to go into Italian soccer briefly. So there's this whole aspect of about the dark arts. You know, if you know the dark arts of the game, you know how to manage the clock. Manage the kind of, you know, if your guys need a break and you go down and you're a DP in this league, you know, you can get an advantage out of that. And so I understand what he was doing. We would do it in the same situation if we could. We can't necessarily,
I
was fine with it.
To me, a lot of his play and just a lot of that stuff just shows kind of what, you know, what I've seen, and not just him, what I've seen from a lot of higher paid European players that come over, it looks almost like a disrespect for the league, I can just kind of do whatever the hell I want, and nobody's gonna do anything.
It's like they're slumming it, people are beneath me.
Yeah,
but at the same time, these guys are absolute competitors. They are going to use every single advantage. You don't get to be one of the best players in the world if you don't use every single advantage. If Drogba figures out that he can work referees in MLS because they're pro refs and they don't know any better, of course he's going to do it. And I would be upset as a fan of the Impact if he didn't do it, if he thought that he could get an advantage from it. I have no problem. When Giancarlo Gonzalez went down, when he got punched and he grabbed his face and went down, I think I was the only one who was like, oh, that was fine. More of that if you can get away with it, buddy, because that worked and it was fantastic.
Against
so
San Jose?
Yeah.
Oh, that was the worst.
It was fantastic. I loved it.
Another aspect of this is the fact that Drogba was, I won't say shut out of the game by the way that the crew played defensively. The one legitimate tackle, the one that was a legitimate tackle that he went down, was the one that resulted in Gaston Saro getting a yellow card.
He was dealt with. He was in Gaston's pocket all game.
Yeah,
like people need to recognize how good Gaston was.
And I think it reminded me with Gino Padula and David Beckham. That reminded me of that.
I think a lot of the what we saw from Drogba on Sunday was as a result of the frustration of I should be dominating this game and I'm not. I'm being completely outworked and outclassed by guys who are much younger than me and below my salary level, below everything else, and I think it ties in with that. It's like, yeah, you're right, Matt. They do. Some DPs do act like MLS is beneath them. And Alex, you're right too. They know how to work the refs, but it comes from I need to get something out of this game. Why am I not the star here? And I think that's a lot of that was frustration.
I just, you know, it's. You see that a lot, and I think that the slumming it analogy I think is apropos. I don't know. I don't.
I'm fine with it.
Oh, it came from the Ivory Coast. I had a thirst for knowledge.
I will take a diver on Crew SC any day if they are good at diving. And Didier is good at it. So
spoken like a true
your resident Italian soccer fan, ladies and gentlemen.
True Italian soccer fan, right there. I don't care if my players spend the entire game on the ground if we win 1-0.
I care about the points. I care about those W's. Get me the W's, and you can do whatever you want.
That's how the league gets its name. Syria.
Oh my God! Hashtag Greg jokes.
That's not a thing anymore.
Sure is.
It's not.
Gregulator 614 for all of your complaints on that terrible joke.
I don't care. I so don't care. After last night, do you care?
No,
I don't.
No. I'm still on cloud nine. Yeah. I'm so happy.
Could you have written a better script for last night?
Yeah, it could have ended in 90 minutes, like 5-0, so that my heart rate could have stayed like at a safe level.
Stoppage time winner would have been the. Yeah, you know, the only way that you could more Hollywood. Yeah. That's
my fingernails would have appreciated outcome. Like a 5-0 game, but that's all right.
You know, there are moments that you talk about going forward. You know, 10, 15, 20 years after they happened, and they, you know, they moments that resonate are what sports fandom is. It reminds us that we're alive and that we did something. It's like having a scar. You know, it may not be the best looking thing, but it's how I remind myself to, you know, not screw with dogs when they're eating food. You know, it may not have been a 5-0 win last night, but it was one of those things that we're all going to look back on in 20 years and go, I was there, I saw it, I got the scars to prove it. My heart is not as strong because of it. And you know, man, I walked into work today, and I guess people at the office are not used to seeing me smile.
yeah, no, it never happens.
Yeah, and
'cause you're such a dour person.
Two people asked me. One person asked me if I won the lottery, and it was a legitimate question. He's like, "Did you win money or something?" I'm like, "No, crew." Second guy was like, "Did you get laid or something?" I'm like, "Never, crew." It was one of those crazy nights, man. Everybody's gonna remember being there, and because of that, and I think I don't like giving too much credit to fans. You know, it's one of my pet peeves to, like, win the stands, of course. You know, but I think if you're just listening to the players' comments after the game, they were empowered by the whole stadium.
Yeah.
And I know that the front office has designated all of 102 now for the next game against New York as an extension of the NORDAC.
It's fake NORDACA.
I don't know what fake means, but we're...
They're not as good as us.
They're not as good as
us. They're like second class.
No, forget.
I'm literally just saying this to troll people who listen to the podcast right now. No. That's the only reason I'm saying
joking. I am not involved in
that. Maybe a little bit of breaking news, though. Section 102, all of it, next game, home game, is going to be NORDAC.
Nice.
NORDAC Alight. Right.
So that just means NORDAC, 102 is going to be empty and everyone's going to try to cram into the front of 138.
Matt. Or go walk into traffic.
Yeah, 140.
Back to you.
You walk into traffic.
Talking about those moments, though, I think the moment that stands out to me, the TIFO was great, and that was fantastic. And Kai's header to win was fantastic. But the moment for me where I was like, we got this, was Finley's goal. You know, you missed the shot. I think it was McInerney who hit it first. And McInerney, for me, changed this game more than anybody else. He was absolutely phenomenal. Not only his work on the ball, but his work off the ball. He created space for other players in a way that we desperately needed. But when that Finley goal went in, the thing, I was just like, we got this. We are going to win this game. It was fantastic.
I think Mac was motivated by wanting to beat his former employers, too.
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's always a little bit of that.
I love that kid. Yes. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, Dilly Duca seemed to show up to play, too. But,
I still like Dilly.
Yeah. It's going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to break down the rest of the playoffs for you. Alex is going to say a bunch more things about Italian soccer. And, that's what's going on. It's the Massive Report. Stick around. It's all right.
Edition of the Massive Report podcast is brought to you, as always, by Land Grant Brewing Company. Hi there, boys and girls. This is your good pal Morgan Hughes, here to clue you in on three little-known facts about the Eastern Conference Finals of Major League Soccer. Little-known fact number one. The very first Eastern Conference Final was played in 1908 at Port Chester University between the Prairie Junction Washpins and the Portsmouth Dancing Silly Nannies, with the Silly Nannies advancing due to the Washpins being disqualified after their entire roster died at halftime from cholera. Oh my. Little known fact number two. If you plan on watching the Home and Home series from Sudan, it would be called Final Conferenci Huitan, which is less of a direct translation of Eastern Conference Finals and more of a way of saying the peak of a great mountaintop unfamiliar to Toronto in Sudanese. Little known fact number three. Contrary to the geographical location listed in their team name, the New York Red Bulls are in fact located in Harrison, New Jersey, a city located on the banks of the Passaic River, which is now only 73% fish urine. Good for you, Harrison! And now for a well-known fact. Land Grant Brewing Company makes tasty beer. That's right, folks. Head on down to Land Grant Brewing Company, located right around the corner at 424 West Town Street, Craig, and find out why their medium-sized glass containers, which are filled to the brim with delicious intoxicating alcohol, are the best way to spend your 2 weeks in between home games at the Fray. So sit down and take a load off on their newly completed porch area, pass the time by throwing back a greenskeeper or two, and never, ever, ever, ever forget to tell them that your friends over at the Massive Report Podcast sent ya.
Mama can a huh, huh? Can a mama, won't you please let me? Mama can a huh? That's the sweetest little dress, Sally. Where'd you get the pattern? Made me one just like it out of yellow dotted Swiss. Yes, I guess we got the earliest garden in the county. Been eating strawberries all week, snapping green beans.
Too bad about your boy.
Mama, make Willie quit pulling at my hair. Mama, ouch, ouch, mama, just make Willie quit it.
Tommy, if you don't put down that stick, I'm gonna wear you out with it, boy. Be quick.
Come quick, Sammy Jean, stuck a finger in a Coke bottle. Can't get it out, cause it's stuck, stuck, stuck.
Now, I told you my mama didn't raise no fool. I can do anything if I got the right tool.
Mama can't.
And we're back in his segment number two of the Massive Reports. Live at Hen Docks, brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company. Morgan, you never fail to surprise me.
I'm sorry, Matt. I wasn't listening to you because I don't like you. Back to you.
Fair enough. So three other games that we need to talk about with potential and or obvious ramifications for the Crew. The Crew will be facing the New York Red Bulls after their thrilling 1-0 defeat of DC United at Red Bull Arena, winning that series 2-0 against DC on aggregate. Cool.
Yeah.
I kind of expected Red Bull to come out of that side of the bracket on top.
Not a particularly edge of your seat series.
Really,
it
not.
It has to be said. Red Bulls did enough to advance against a team that was kind of overmatched. Based on DC's form coming into the playoffs, so obviously the 5-0 to Columbus will stand out. But
is anybody super impressed by New York?
Not really.
No.
Not really. In the game on Sunday, they only had 5 shots on target.
Yeah.
DC had 2.
God.
You know, it just, it. I didn't get a chance to watch that game, but it just, to me, seemed like a snooze fest.
Yeah. Jesse Marsh hates fun, and he hates good soccer, and so they play terrible soccer, but they win.
Yeah.
Back to you, Matt.
It's doing what you need to do to get the result, which I understand and, you know, can respect that, but at the same time, it just, DC, I'm sorry, in the entire series, DC had 2 shots on target.
Yeah, they had none in game.
Yeah, they had 0
one.
Shots.
Yeah. Wow.
0 shots on frame in the first game. Red Bull had 9 in the first game. Just kind of if
it's important to note that what's his name? Perrinel, the the starting center back who's now injured and out for the rest of the playoffs for the Metro Stars. With him in the lineup, they were 14-3-3 on the season. Without, they are 5-7-3.
Yeah.
So this is not the unbeatable juggernaut that we saw down the stretch. It could be argued. Matt. Back to you.
You know, we'll break down the New York Columbus match.
Oh yeah, we will.
A little bit later in the program. Just a little bit later. Out of the West, two games, obviously. FC Dallas goes on to beat Seattle in penalties.
Seattle only dreams now.
I gotta say this because I know that Seattle winning would have knocked out one of the higher seeds that's above Columbus right now.
Doesn't matter.
And
doesn't
increases matter. The right. This is what I'm saying. Anyone who follows me on Twitter knows this. It increases the likelihood that Columbus hosts the Cup. Yada yada yada. No, I cannot bring myself to root for Seattle under any circumstances. I will cheer for whoever they're playing. I don't care.
So here's why I cheered for Seattle.
Oh my God.
Two reasons.
Because Alex Stanek.
Number one, because FC Dallas scare me. And number two, if they make it to the Western Conference Finals, Siggy Schmid keeps his job and they don't get Jason Kreis. I think Siggy's out now and they're going to hire Kreis because Lagerwey is in Seattle and he's going to reunite with his RSL buddy. And that's going to be that. But they're going to be way better with Kreis, I think, than they will be with Ziggy. So that's why I was cheering for that. You know, you give them a little bit of happiness now and then you take away even more happiness for them down the road. So that's why I was cheering for the Sounders to no avail.
You use far too much logic in hatred. There can be no logic in hatred,
Alex. You got to plan this stuff out. Teams aren't bad on the basis of one thing. They're bad because of a series of bad decisions. And by placing them in positions where they are forced to make terrible choices,
you're talking about ensuring that they are miserable forever. You're talking about non-preferation. We're talking about hatred,
yes.
Okay?
Yes. Seattle, getting knocked out of the playoffs brought me so much joy after that. I didn't think it was possible for me to be more happy after the Crew game.
Yeah.
And then that was just that took my happiness level from like 95.5% to 96%.
And this range of emotions that both fan bases must have felt in that game all happened in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and they were in the same position we were returning home down 2-1.
2-1, yeah.
You know, Dallas scoring to basically put them up.
Yep.
Seattle scoring to put them up.
Yeah,
and then Dallas scoring again to tie it up.
Yeah,
within 4 minutes. Also, Chad Marshall
got the goal for Seattle too. Yes.
I mean, God, what could be like? There's so many things to be happy about.
Yeah,
Chad scored. Good on Chad. You know.
Yeah.
He's a Crew legend. No other way to talk about it. And to watch Seattle go down on penalty kicks. Oh my God.
And it was not even close in the shootout either, because you know they had two. They had two kicks saved in a row.
Yeah.
What's his name? Stepping up big time.
Yeah.
Keeper for Dallas.
20-year-old.
Yeah.
Actually, not only was the goalkeeper 20 years old, all four of the penalty shooters, or five, were under the age of 25.
Jesus, tradition.
Talk about playing your kids. Group. I mean,
It was Gonzalez. For
Gonzalez.
Yeah.
That's right.
It was a very exciting end to a game, and the result made me very happy. Alex kind of stepped on my second question, but that's fine. We'll allow it this time. How soon do they fire Siggy?
Man. Do you think they go straight to coaching change, or do they try to bring in, you know, one more year of highly paid?
No.
Just straight firing?
They've had 7 years now.
Yeah.
With one guy, one system, essentially, and with the exception of some open cups, which they might regard as, you know, hey, we've won something.
Well, in the supporter
shield. And the supporter shield.
Yeah,
they have three open cups and a supporter shield, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they have four trophies
in 7 years. It's not a bad return, but at the same time, there's that big
six
empty.
Years.
6 years.
No, seven.
Seven.
2000, yeah.
09
10, to 15.
Oh, you're right. Okay. I don't know why I was thinking
this is their seventh year
of
futility.
Right.
Seventh year. And again,
of quote regardless unquote futility, of, I'd take four trophies. And
well, regardless of the fact that there's four trophies,
most teams in this league would take four trophies.
There's still that empty spot in the trophy case. That's
and above their crest.
Yeah. Very true. Yeah. And that's how teams in MLS really are measured.
And this is since 73, by the way.
Yeah.
This is, you know, since 1973, they're still cupless.
Yeah, they haven't won an MLS Cup.
Yeah.
since 1973.
And they were the team that invented soccer. Well, there's to not have a cup is just inexcusable. Get out of here, Siggy.
There are a couple things to consider with them, too. I mean, they have their attendance and their fans think that they're the best team in the league, and they're obviously not the best team in the league. Their fans demand that they be the best.
Yeah.
So did Toronto's.
They're paying a lot. I know, and Toronto's made a lot of changes, and I think that's what's happening here in Seattle is that
a lot of changes. Toronto has made a lot of
They've made a few.
A lot of
stronger words.
They've made a lot of coaching
50
changes.
Yeah. But
all of the coaching.
Yeah. But I think it's time for them to move on. I think Jason Kreis and Garth Lagerwey are going to want to get back together, I think. But we'll see. Kreis could always take the U.S. job.
But he could. That's what I've been talking about.
Jason Kreis is smart. He waits until after January.
Yeah.
Before making any decisions.
Well, I think that's what he's going to do. I think he's going to wait until at least December, see how these next two friendlies play out. And if they move on from Jurgen, I think he is going to be in the conversation for that job.
Topic for another segment, but Kyle Martino just was tweeting about this, and he said, you know, quote, someday Greg Berhalter will coach the national team.
Yeah,
unquote.
Back to you, Alex.
I don't think it's going to be this year. I hope it's not this year.
I don't think it's going to be this year, no. But
it's Lord Guillermo, no.
Yeah, we will see what happens. But
speaking of Lord Guillermo.
Well, I'm sure we'll talk about that coaching change as well.
Oh, we've got so much stuff to get to still.
Yeah. But I think in the end, they're going to have to move on from Ziggy. They've tried everything with him. They've given him a crazy high budget for this league. They have a lot of really talented players who he never got them to really play the right way. At least when it was push time in the playoffs, you know, they always were disappointing.
Yeah.
And their fans are fed up. And so, rightly or wrongly, I think he's going to have to go.
Yeah. If this was almost any other team in this league and he had the success rate that he's – Seattle's never missed the playoffs, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
Seattle's never missed the playoffs. Seattle has, three Open Cups and a supporter shield. Most other teams in the league would be. Okay. Yeah, this works. Not so much there. The last result that we need to talk about, Portland beats Vancouver in Vancouver by a score of 2-0. Portland advances, and so now we have, with that, the potential MLS Cup hosting sites down to three. If Portland wins out of the West and Columbus wins out of the East, it's Columbus, Portland, and Columbus. If Dallas wins, it's Dallas Columbus in Dallas, and those are the only two options that we have, right?
I got the joke.
The one thing that I tweeted this out earlier today, it's something just to check off of your hipster bingo card. The potential Columbus Portland MLS Cup is the day after the Sleater-Kinney show in Columbus. So all of Timber's Army right now,
the
probably.
The entire Portland.
Yeah, it's just freaking out.
I'm so hipster, I don't even know who that is.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there is something important about all of this, which is CONCACAF Champions League for the crew.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If Portland win, we are not – is that correct?
Portland winning MLS Cup is the only way that the crew do not play in Champions League next year.
Yep. So if there is a Champions
so
League
if,
next
if
year.
So if Portland win – we host MLS Cup, assuming we win. If Portland lose, we're in the Champions League. So no matter what the result is of the game in the West, there is some upside for the crew.
We get something out of
if
it.
If there's a Champions League next year, which is not a certainty.
I think there will be.
False.
That's a hell of an argument.
Yvonne Seagull, everyone.
Who are we going to send to?
Show.
Hi, Yvonne.
Hi, Yvonne.
How are you doing?
Morgan threw down a French fry, and here she is.
Take my mic. Oh man, that was good, Greg.
Sorry,
Greg. Jokes making a comeback, everyone.
No, it's not. It's absolutely not.
So,
It's not a comeback.
Don't call it a comeback. Hi, Yvonne. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to see you. How are the horses?
Good. I'm a little horse smelly at the moment. Just came from there, so
can confirm.
I've been sitting. I've been sitting next to Greg all night, so I didn't even notice. Body wash is not a thing.
Have you hatched any horse eggs lately? Because we know that horses are born in eggs, Yvonne. Back
we
to you.
We do. We have learned that, yes.
Yeah.
Tifo Sweat emails are so educational.
Absolutely.
So we're just about We're just about to wrap up this segment, but I'll real quick get your thoughts on what we talked about last segment, because we're planners. What'd you think of the game?
Well, I will be brief, despite the fact that I had said that if I did come on the podcast tonight and somebody gave me a mic, I would turn into female Frankie. But, I couldn't sleep till 3. I didn't get much sleep all day long. I just can't stop being excited about it. It was phenomenal. The atmosphere, you know, you always hear people talk about playoff atmosphere and the intenseness of playoff atmosphere this and blah, blah, blah. I don't think I'd ever, even in 2008, I really just don't ever remember playoff atmosphere. And last night was just, I mean, it was beyond. It was absolutely incredible. Every single person in the entire stadium.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of education the Crusale staff gave the casual people that had never been to a game before. If they were like, this is how you have to, you know, this is the situation, get revved up, whatever. But everybody was just...
I think we're entering an era where, or maybe we're already in it, where there are less casuals, yet more people in the stadium.
There were indoctrination centers set up in the parking lot.
Well, yeah, that's what, I mean, it really felt like,
E-meters.
I'm sure that there were a lot of people that were like, oh yeah, let's go to a game, that'll be fun. They weren't invested other than the fact that this was their hometown team. You know, beyond that, I don't think they were invested at all, but everybody felt educated and invested.
I think there go on.
People were booing Drog. There were a lot of people around me that I had never seen before, because a lot of the people that I sit with did not get their season tickets for playoffs. I know they were in the building somewhere because I saw a lot of them, but they weren't sitting next to me. So there were a lot of strangers around me, and they were all educated about what was going on. Not just what soccer is, but Drogba leg lock. People knew about that. Like, people knew what the stakes were, what was happening, and all of the little ins and outs of that. It was incredible.
Yeah, huge
incredible.
Credit to the sales team for getting, you know, almost 20,000 people in the building, and a huge credit to the marketing department for, you know, educating those who might not know what the stakes were ahead of time.
There wasn't a blank slate anywhere in the city that didn't have a gobo pointed at it, you know, or a poster, or, you know, they took the cup everywhere. You know, people got excited in the city. They just did a phenomenal job.
Frankie longboarding down 4th Street, just hanging up random flags on phone poles.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. You know, you just go, bro. Like, there's nowhere to pass it right now. It's the playoffs.
I definitely felt a snowball effect inside the stadium of, you know, the energy that was going around the crowd. Everyone was feeding off of each other with that, and it just escalated to the point that by kickoff and by the time the first goal went in, you felt like if they had ever put a roof on the place, it was gone.
We remember what it was like when it wasn't like this, because it was recently.
Yeah.
A very short time ago, I remember driving around town, and if I'd see a Crew bumper sticker, I'd be like, whoa, sweet, a Crew bumper sticker.
Yeah.
You know, or like a sign in a window at a business. Now it's expected.
Well, yeah. Now they're all
quickly
over the place.
Things change.
Here's the thing. This is the only real. Here's a gauge for you. You guys in the Nordica, you have CSC in your aisles, in front of your section, behind your section. You are surrounded by CSC. There are a lot of other.
They followed me home.
right now.
If you take a walk around the stadium, you will see a stadium, you know, a security person here, a security person there. You know, they have their pockets where they are all the time. Where I sit, which for those listeners out there, I don't sit in the club seats behind the bench, but I sit one section beyond that, behind the bench. And we don't have CSC there because there's so much team personnel and there's cameras. We don't ever have, like, we've got an usher in our aisle to make sure you know where your seats are, but we don't have security.
AKA your grown-ups.
Yeah, and honestly, like, a lot of the people in my section are either friends and family of the staff. I mean, you know, it's about maybe halfway through overtime. It was probably about halfway through overtime. I looked right in front of our section, and there was a big old CSC guy, arms crossed, bouncer beyond extraordinaire, standing in front of our section. And you know why that was? they were afraid we were going to storm the field because that is the kind of energy we had in the stadium. The fact that they would think that people who are going home, you know, the family of the players might even storm the field. We have to put a security guard in front of their section.
That's actually why they brought up the police officers, the Columbus CPD, in front of the NORDEC. They brought like six of them. And I'm like, what's going on? They're like, oh, nothing. They're just afraid that the guys might storm the field.
Because of the... So two things. The very first game in Ohio Stadium in 1996, everybody wanted to... I mean, like, that... We felt like, and people did. People actually did storm the field, and I really, really wanted to, but I didn't want to get arrested, you know. And that's how it felt last night. I thought, oh, my God, this could actually be a thing that happens, which was crazy. But the really funny thing was that Steve Tashjian came over to get his daughter from his wife because, you know, the players always come over to get their kids. And he came over to take his daughter out onto the field. And the security guy stopped him. And basically, like, I couldn't read the lips, but he basically was saying, sir, you can't do that. And because he didn't see. Yeah. And, you know, so he just sees him carrying this little girl and trying to take her back out on the field. And I think he just thought he was like.
Some random dude
trying to take. And he could see Steve shaking his head and going, no, it's okay. And the guy's like, I can't let you do that. And Steve's like, I'm going to do it. And then he took his dog. But you know, I don't know exactly what the exchange was, but I just thought that was hilarious.
When the banner was going and we were trying to get it to go outside of the NORDEC all the way down the east side, I spastically, and John Zidar did the same thing, jumped down on the field level to just run over there and go, everybody throw it that way. And I mean, CSC, like the guy like grabbed me and he's like, I will kick you out of the stadium. Get the hell back in your seat. I'm like, oh, we have rules now? Oh, okay. Sorry, sir.
Do not throw things onto the field, including Morgan.
Yeah. All right, guys, we got to take a break because we got to do the Red Bull podcast for about 10 minutes. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit of World Cup qualifying. That's on the slate for this weekend. And then we're going to talk more crew. It's all coming up next is the Massive Report.
Nice fried chicken. Barbecue chicken.
Everyone's talking about chicken. Chicken's a popular word. But anywhere you go, you're bound to find a chicken ain't nothing but a bird. Some people call it a fowl. That's the story I heard. But let them call it this and let them call it that. A chicken ain't nothing but a bird.
This edition of the Mass... Oh, wait, I got Morgan's notes. My bad. Episode 61 of Cards Against Insanity, sponsored this week by Hall's Hot Tea and Hangover Remedies. Literally brought to you by all of the above. Opinions are mine and don't necessarily reflect those of the Massive Report or Columbus Crew SC. Bears game on in the background, so I'm going to be quick. Yellow card to the visiting Tottenham fans who took their rivalry with Arsenal to the toilet on Sunday. Literally. Prior to the match between the two sides at the Emirates Stadium, which finished 1-1, Spurs fans allegedly took their frustrations out on the public bathrooms, smashing several toilets to pieces in the away supporters' end. This was apparently retaliation for Arsenal fans ripping down a sign at White Hart Lane back in September. For what it's worth, the home fans mourned the destruction of the toilets, describing them as the perfect place to park your Arsenal. Yellow card to the residents of Oxford, Mississippi, particularly the Ole Miss fans who apparently blew up the local 911 lines, reporting a problem at the stadium during Saturday night's game against Arkansas. The guy that they were trying to get kicked out of the stadium? The Arkansas quarterback. Brandon Allen's 442 yards, 6-touchdown performance was upsetting to so many Rebels fans that the Oxford Police Department had to tweet, quote, asking us to kick the Arkansas QB out of the stadium is not a legit reason to dial 911, #ArkVersusMiss, end quote. It got worse, too, as Arkansas won in overtime after a couple improbable plays where it looked like Ole Miss had the game in the bag, which meant that unfortunately anyone in Oxford who reported an actual robbery after that point just got hung up on. Yellow card to Dong Lu, a Chinese commentator working for Lee TV, calling last week's Champions League game between Real Madrid and PSG. At least he called the first half. And then as the clock ticked over to almost 4 a.m. Beijing time and the action on the field petered out in the latter stages, so did he. Yep, Lu passed out to the point that he could be heard snoring on the mic during the last 20 minutes of the game.
And despite being a seasoned veteran with over 20 years of commentary experience, one night of gearing was enough to cost him his job. He was fired immediately after the final whistle. However, it does mean a potential job opening for friend of the show, Chris Edwards. Take a Red Bull to the audition. Maybe not Red Bull. Green card to the NFL. You probably remember a few months back on this segment a story about the NFL and other sports leagues in the U.S. taking taxpayer money from what became known as paid patriotism. The salutes to the troops and so forth had turned out to not be organic displays of support, but rather paid recruitment stunts by the military. Well, the NFL said last week that they intend to pay back at the very least a portion of the $6.8 million they and their member teams received over the last 3 years from the Department of Defense. Exactly how much they intend to pay back and whether or not they actually follow through on this are still unclear. Remember, this is the NFL we're talking about. So the green card is completely contingent on them actually forking over the cash and making amends for their role in a black eye moment for both themselves and our servicemen and women. Soldiers are not props. Please don't treat them that way. Yellow card to Rolf Nilsson, the owner of the Flint Firebirds of the Ontario Hockey League, who has suddenly found himself without a team. Down 3-1 to the Oshawa Generals on Sunday, the Firebirds came back to win 4-3 in overtime, only to discover that Nilsson had fired the coaching staff immediately after the game, in large part because his son, Håkan Nilsson, wasn't getting enough ice time. In a show of solidarity, all 24 players immediately marched upstairs to the owner's office, took their jerseys off, threw them on the floor, and quit. Yes, all 24 players, including Håkan Nilsson. Awkward. Even people who will take a junior hockey salary to live in Flint, Michigan, apparently still have a breaking point. Yellow card to an unnamed FC Goa player playing for the Indian Super League club against Chennaiyin over the weekend caused the game to be delayed for several minutes when the referee ordered him to change his underwear. No, this was not as a result of any pre-game meal, but because Goa wear white shorts, apparently whatever color they were showed right through, and the ref was distracted enough to order the player to the sheds to change. The player found a new pair and play resumed. By the way, I really want to know if they were his or if he had to borrow them from someone else. Anyway, Goa won 2-0. And the report didn't say what color the offending underoos were, but I can only guess they were red and had Happy Holidays written across the cheeks just to piss off everyone on Breitbart. And finally, card to the NFL. I'm sorry, did I already give them a green card too? Yeah, well, that's how it goes. After the aforementioned paid patriotism story and domestic violence scandals happening on almost a monthly basis, the NFL is now tackling, no pun intended, its most pressing issue right now, players wearing the wrong color mouth guards. Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown wore a pink mouthpiece against the Cincinnati Bengals on November 1st, 24 hours after the official end of the league's breast cancer awareness, crucial catch, pink out, whatever campaign. As a result, Brown was considered out of uniform, and reports were that he would likely be fined for wearing a piece of equipment in a non-approved color. And when pressed about the issue, the NFL said they weren't saying whether Brown was fined, and if he was, how much. An NFL spokesperson told NBC, quote, "I do not yet have an answer, and not today. Sometimes the timing of uniform fines differs from other on-field disciplines," end quote. Which means, yeah, he was. And if he wasn't, they'd have said so. Look, I've been critical in the past of the pink out that the NFL and other sports put on, and Breast Cancer Awareness Month in general. This time last year, I described it on Cards Against Insanity as a cynical cash grab based on selling sex. Breast cancer, despite not being the most common or the most deadly form of cancer, gets the attention because, well, everyone loves boobs, right? But at the same time, I've come to accept that it is a thing, that the players who wear the pink gloves, pink cleats, pink towels, pink mouthpieces, whatever, are doing it with good intentions. Which is why I don't have a problem with Brown wearing the mouth guard on a non-designated pink publicity day. But the NFL apparently does, and they've set a precedent for this in the past. As recently as 2 weeks ago, Brown's Pittsburgh teammate William Gay, whose mother was killed in an act of domestic violence, wore purple cleats during a game for domestic violence awareness. The NFL fined him just under $6,000. So it's extremely likely that Brown's going to be fined for this too. The NFL just doesn't want to tell anyone that because to do so would make them look like monsters. You know, because they have such a stellar public image right now. Remember back to last year when the crew wore military-themed jerseys with camo numbers? Can you imagine that being extended to another game or a player wearing a special armband or cleats or whatever and MLS coming down on them for it? MLS has its idiosyncrasies we all dislike, but at least they're not this overbearing. And look, I understand why the NFL has rules about its uniforms and players wearing certain equipment in certain colors. I get it. And I also get that to allow players like Brown and Gay to get away without fines sets a precedent that could lead to players just wearing whatever the hell they want or what Nike and Adidas pay them to. You know, like soccer. But there's also no way the NFL doesn't come out of this looking like they treat any of these promotions the way that they do. Military, breast cancer, whatever you like, as the cynical marketing tools that they seem to be. And occasionally we need to be reminded that problems in our society don't just go away just because the calendar ticked over to a date where a governing body decides it's no longer relevant. My name is Greg Benson. You can find me on Twitter as Gregulator614. And if you're at Hendock's Pub, you're in my seat. A reminder once again to use the hashtag MRCards if you've got something I should be including on next week's show. Until then, play on, but remember, I'm watching you.
And we're back. It is segment number three.
It really does.
Yeah, it does. Wow. It's a very...
Thank goodness nobody looked at me this
yeah.
time.
Yeah. A certain herbal essence floated over the crowd here. And immediately, Yvonne turns and goes, Ryan.
It's really strong.
Yeah,
what
it really
in the world is.
Is
going on?
Somebody...
Yeah, I don't know.
Somebody's spirit animal is a skunk tonight.
Yeah, something happened outside, is my guess.
Somebody make sure the office door is closed.
In front of the bar. Yes.
Episode 420 of The Massive Report.
There it is.
All right, so anyway, getting back to what we're talking about, we are brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company, and from what I remember, issue 3 didn't pass.
Because that stops everyone.
Oh, I know. No, that's, you know. That's why we do that. So, guys, World Cup qualifying starts for real. For realsies. Real tough group. And I'm going to have Morgan kind of break this down. I'm going to frame it and then have Morgan break down each one of these opponents.
All right.
Because I need your expert analysis on this. This is a difficult, difficult group. C in the CONCACAF qualifying is super difficult. So we've got the United States.
Yes. That's where we are right
now. Right now. We have Guatemala.
Yep, that's a country.
We have Trinidad and Tobago.
That's two countries for sure.
And we have St. Vincent and the Grenadines.
Ah.
Sounds like a man and a drink.
What's that?
Grenadine is what you put in a Shirley Temple.
It is what you put in a Shirley Temple. Thank you so much, Yvonne.
I know a lot about all these things.
Yes.
Trinidad and Tobago are two national teams that Kevon George plays for. We all know that. We're all big Kevon fans. Loved the picture of him as Jesus in the locker room last night. That was fantastic.
That was a cool picture, by the way.
Guatemala, I heard about that in school one time. I'm pretty sure it's a city in Florida. Good on them for getting a national team. It's kind of weird. The last one, Vince and the Grands, and the Grandines.
Yeah. Grenadines, yeah.
It's a doo-wop band from the 50s,
It
right?
was. It was a rival band to Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. And since they lost that battle, they decided, why not have a soccer team? So I like our chances, Matt. And America, number one. So back to you.
So the first game, for some real analysis, we'll go to Alex. The first game, Busch Stadium. In beautiful, scenic St. Louis, Missouri. That's going to be happening this Friday.
Are they playing baseball first?
Yes.
Is that why they're going there?
Yes. Against St. Vincent and the Grenadines. What are your thoughts, Alex? How many goals is the U.S. going to win by?
I don't know. We'll win, but...
52 soccer goals?
No. I don't think we're going to play that well against St. Vincent, honestly. We're going to win, but they're terrible. And then everybody's going to be like, oh, crisis is over, guys. Look, we're back. And then Trinidad's going to come along, and we're going to drop points, and everybody's going to lose it. And then Sunil Gulati's going to fire Jurgen Klinsmann, and it's going to be a disaster. He should be fired, but it's still going to be like a dumpster fire.
Do you
fire
really think we're going to drop points against Trinidad?
I think we're going to drop points. I think we're going to drop points against somebody. I think Jurgen Klinsmann has lost the United States men's national team locker room, and I think they are not going to play for him.
It is so difficult for me. Guatemala is about the only team that I think that we could potentially lose points to if we had a more difficult qualifying group, I could potentially see where you're coming from. But I don't with we got the most cupcake of all of the
I understand
of all of the club cupcake matches because okay you look at Mexico has got to play. As I just had it pulled up. And then Mexico's got to play Honduras, El Salvador, and Canada. which, sorry, Canada. Costa Rica has got to play Panama, Haiti, and Jamaica. And then we have to play teams that are not making the World Cup. The only reason that one of these teams is going to be in the hex is because one of them has to be besides the United States. Because that's how the rules work. That's the only reason.
Yeah. I'm telling you.
Do you think they're going to fire Klinsmann if he goes through and wins?
I think that the U.S. players know that if they drop points in the next two friendlies, Klinsmann will go. And so I think they will try to get Klinsmann fired. I don't know. I think that you see cracks developing. You see people who are really connected to the national team coming out publicly and saying it's time for him to go. People all over American soccer have their knives out for Klinsmann, and I think it's hard to turn something like that around. Anything that's positive is portrayed as like a fluke, and everything that's negative is portrayed as this is more evidence that Klinsmann has no idea what he's doing. It's a matter of time before he goes.
Knives Out for Klinsmann was also one of my favorite emo bands in the
they were great.
90s.
They were fantastic.
They were pretty darn awesome. Greg.
You know what? Going completely on Gold Cup form, which is what I am doing here, because that's the last time that I've seen any of these teams with the exception of the U.S., Trinidad and Tobago are dangerous. They had a hell of a tournament. In the Gold Cup this year, if they can carry that form over to the qualifying, I think they'll be the second team to go through to the hex with the U.S. And I don't think it's even close. I don't rate Guatemala or St. Vincent compared to them. I think that's the team that we need to watch out for. I think it's trap games all up and down the board in this particular group, but I still think the U.S. beats St. Vincent handily. 4-0 at least. If not, I'm not going to dabble in the conspiracy theory angle that Alex is, because Alex, you strike me as the kind of guy who played The Sims and sat back and watched it, going, "Yes, fight my little pretty."
I've never played The Sims. My friend created me in The Sims and then made me marry her friend, and I was like, "That's not fair. Well, you can't do that." That's all I know about.
It's not
the
fair
Sims.
To her either.
Yeah. I know, right? Jeez.
I just remember in The Sims, my little sister.
We're gonna get tweets about this. Just
yes, my little sister creating one of her ex boyfriends and then filling the house full of wicker chairs and fireplaces, and taking the doors out.
I became president of the United States in that Sims game. So, Greg, beware.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
I'm gonna deport you for fun.
No, you're not. No. In
just for banter.
Executive order, crikey.
I think it's.
I'm going to show him 1,000 objects that look like knives, and if he can't pick out the one knife, he's gone.
I had a thought. It's gone.
Or you're just going to drop off 10,000 spoons.
Yeah.
And all I need is... Oh, never mind.
Morgan.
National team stuff?
National team stuff.
National team stuff.
You just don't care, do you?
No, I really don't like the national team. I don't care at all.
Then let me just... I'll just keep ranting about
this.
Yes,
please do.
I just don't know... The body language from the team has not been good for a while. There are whispers about, you know, players who are unhappy. There's whispers about the management, including Greg Berhalter's brother, in U.S. soccer is unhappy. So I don't know what they're gonna do, but I don't think Klinsmann makes it to the next World Cup. I really don't think he's the coach in Russia. I don't know who we get, but. With Kreis out of a job, I mean, is this the time you make the move and say, all right, Jason, have fun, do your best, buddy? I mean, who else is going to be?
Do you think
Kreis
is next man up?
I think so.
I think if he's offered the job, for sure he takes it. But I'm not sure who you get who's... I mean, you could go with Greg Berhalter. That's something that some people have floated. I think it's way too early for that. You could go with Ziggy or somebody like that. I think it's too late for that.
People talking about Bruce Arena. Yeah, I was just about to say that.
Bruce, but I mean, do you really want to go back to Bruce? I don't know. I think if I were Sunil Gulati, I would get rid of Klinsmann, and I would probably... It would be between Kreis and Arena, and I would probably give Kreis a shot, because we've seen what Arena can offer, and it's competent, but it's not amazing. Give Jason a shot. Who knows?
All right. Well, the biggest thing is we'll find out. That's going to be this Friday and Tuesday. That's the other game, the U.S. going to Trinidad and Tobago.
They will beat St. Vincent. They will beat St. Vincent. They're terrible.
They'll beat St. Vincent. St. Vincent qualified 3-2 against Aruba.
Yeah, our U-23s can beat St. Vincent and the Grenadines, but Trinidad, they scare me, kind of. I don't know. We'll see.
It's that, and then you have Guatemala that beat Antigua 2-1, and then I'm even trying. Yeah, and then Trinidad and Tobago didn't have to play in the previous round. So
these early CONCACAF qualifying games, for the most part, are pointless. I mean, even if we lost to Trinidad and St. Vincent, we'd still turn it around. I mean, you can have a couple fluke games in these early rounds and be totally fine. I mean, Mexico made the World Cup and they had like a disaster half year. So
yeah, but to be fair, Mexico in the last qualifying round, Mexico was a dumpster fire.
Yeah,
I mean they were bad.
Yeah,
we're pretty bad
now
too.
They needed
though.
Help from the U.S. Yeah. Literally,
we're not looking so good ourselves. We're not at Mexico kind of.
But we don't have to be
crisis yet. But
yeah, well, I mean, we don't have to.
I just want us to be better than we've been, and I feel like with Klinsmann, we've seen a number of years where there's been a lot of talk of progress, and I have not seen that progress. I definitely think that he should stay on as technical director because I do like his vision for the way the youth system will work and this idea that we're going to have one philosophy from top to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
We need that. We can't just have it be the way it's been where it's been, you know, you have one coach at U16 coaching one way and you have another guy at U23 coaching another way. That has to stop.
Yeah.
But I'm not sold on his first team coaching ability. I don't know.
Well,
I hope they win both games though. I really do. I love this national team. I want Klinsmann to succeed. I've lost faith in the last few months. I think it's time for him to go.
Well, the game in Trinidad, I want to get Morgan's opinion on this just because it's being played, the city it's being played at is Port of Spain.
Yes, of course.
So just wanted to check in on you on that.
Yeah.
Where is that?
It's a port right outside of Spain. A lot of boats there, Matt. Water access, mostly. Some call it the sea. Others say the ocean. It's really up to interpretation. But, it's right there.
Is the game going to be played underwater?
A lot of people are saying yes, but my sources are telling me that there is grass somewhere in the world and possibly there. And so who can be sure? Boats also can be used on water. So if we decide to play it in video game form, it could happen on a boat, Matt.
That's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back in just a minute and break down this whole crew New York Red Bulls series. That's coming up next. This is the Massive Report.
And now, the nations of the world, brought to you by Yakko Warner.
United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, Republic, Dominican, Cuba, Caribbean, Greenland, El Salvador, too, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Venezuela, Honduras, Guyana, and still, Guatemala, Bolivia, then Argentina, and Ecuador, Chile, Brazil, Costa Rica, Belize, Nicaragua, Bermuda, Bahamas, Tobago, San Juan, Paraguay, Uruguay, Suriname, and French Guiana, Barbados, and Guam. Norway and Sweden and Iceland and Finland and Germany now want peace. Switzerland, Austria, Czechoslovakia, Italy, Turkey and Greece. Poland, Romania, Scotland, Albania, Ireland, Russia, Oman. Bulgaria, Saudi Arabia, Hungary, Cyprus, Iraq and Iran. There's Syria, Lebanon, Israel, Jordan, both Yemen, Kuwait and Bahrain. The Netherlands, Luxembourg, Belgium and Portugal, France, England, Denmark and Spain. India, Pakistan, Burma, Afghanistan, Thailand, Nepal and Bhutan.
Teenage poetry, fragment ideas into when you look at this atmosphere that we had in the stadium today, you know, that's the beauty of soccer. And that's when, you know, you're proud to be from Columbus and you're proud to put on a show like that for the fans because they were amazing. You know, just as good as the team was, the fans were amazing tonight. So we really enjoyed that.
And we're back at his segment number four of the Massive Reports. Words from Greg after the match. Your thoughts, Greg?
Oh, me?
Yes.
I don't know, man. I just feel like we're the whole team is still riding this wave of momentum that the fans helped create last night. And I hope it lasts 2 weeks because it feels like a long time. Really, really long time.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Alex.
Are we talking about Red Bull?
We're just talking about Greg's comments at the end of the game.
I think he's...
That were just played.
I think he's given us a little bit too much credit. I thought we were good. I think we can be better. Mm-hmm. I think I want to see Nordeca filled half hour before the game starts. I want to see us cheering those guys on. We cheered them on a little bit, but I want to hear us be really loud mm-hmm. when they come into Mapfre Stadium next time. I want us to just keep stepping up our game, and they'll keep stepping theirs up, and you know we'll take this thing all the way.
All right, Morgan.
Greg Berhalter has a really genuine connection with fans, you know, both inside of you know the corner and outside of the corner. Evidence is you know of many things. The drop it twice thing earlier in the year, where MLS was like nah, and he was like nah. Yeah. Everyone remember that? That was yep. great, right?
So. It was great.
That was exactly how that went, too.
Yeah. No, I mean...
Then he said, for sure.
I don't know. I don't like giving fans a lot of credit or any credit at all. You know, obviously it's better to play in front of a packed house where everybody's engaged than it is to play in front of an empty house against the Dayton Dutch Lions. So, you know, good on Cruisers fans, let's get more of it, but let's not pat ourselves on the back too hard and throw our shoulders out.
Speaking of, I do want to touch on this real quick before we go into the New York thing. You reminded me of something that I just a bullet point that I wanted to...
Dayton killed Eddie Gavin? Yeah, they sure did.
Dayton did kill Eddie Gavin. The Dutch Lions no longer a thing in Dayton.
And rightfully so.
However, the Cincinnati Saints announced this week that they are moving to Dayton. Mm-hmm. Mostly because of the FC Cincinnati thing. They will be rebranding. I tweeted at them that they should call the team 1903 Dayton, and they replied with a winky smiley face. So it's probably going to be something Wright Brothers themed. That's really the only thing that I know about it at this point. Details forthcoming. And it's going to be a full rebrand, and hopefully good luck on them, and hopefully they can succeed.
I wish Chad Hollingsworth nothing but the best.
Back hopefully to you, they Chad. Can succeed in that market.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's a decent sized city, and
they have a great ingress portal in their stadium, don't they, Matt and Ryan Gear?
They don't have a stadium yet.
Fair.
But when they do, they're going to have an
it's
ingress
be
portal,
amazing.
The likes of which you've never seen.
Exactly.
You said ingress portal, and Ryan Gear immediately woke up from his nap.
Where am I? What is this place?
Yeah. We were just talking about ingress.
Okay. Yes. We do also have to announce at some point we'll be doing another Massive Report podcast after hours where Ryan Gear will be talking about competitive eating, taking a nap, and then talking more about competitive eating.
Can we briefly talk about Guillermo?
We haven't touched on the Guillermo thing yet. Yeah.
I don't want to talk about this.
We kind of got to. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Right.
Chicago Fire looking to hire a new head coach. One of the names being mentioned is somebody that they're talking to is Guillermo Barros Schelotto. I think they're going to hire Tab Ramos,
yeah.
honestly.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, I think that's who you go with in that situation. But Guillermo's certainly a qualified coach. He's certainly somebody that that would be in a coaching discussion, especially for, you know, for a team like Chicago that would have him on their radar.
I just don't think it's going to happen. I don't think Guillermo's going to go to Chicago because I don't think he's their first choice.
He seems to have kind of fallen off the rumor mill a little bit. Mm-hmm. It seems like Tab Ramos is the front runner. They're talking to a couple other guys, but Nelson Rodriguez and Tab Ramos both came up through the New Jersey soccer scene back in the day, and so they're buddies apparently. And it sounds like Nelson wants to bring him there.
Yeah. They also, the other guy that I've heard rumors of that they're interviewing this week is the homeless guy that fell asleep next to me on the Orange Line coming back from Midway Airport.
Ted Williams,
last...
golden voice.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. so that's that's also somebody on the
radar. Is that not a position that is just tailor-made for Eric Winalda?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Eric Winalda approached Chicago. The thing,
of course,
let me talk.
Yeah, Eric,
here's the thing: Chicago approached all of these other guys. Eric Winalda had to go to Ridgeview.
Eric
hey guys,
like, hey,
you hiring?
If you're not following Eric Winalda on Twitter, you should do it because he is the most honest person, and I think he's so honest that it actually like hurts his chances at jobs like this.
Yeah.
But he just flat out said, "Yeah, we talked. We talked, and they basically said thanks, but no thanks."
Yeah.
And he also name dropped some. Guy who's coaching in the Bundesliga. He was like, yeah, they wanted to talk to him too. I like put him in touch with this guy.
Huh.
So yeah, you probably shouldn't say that, Eric, but Eric's a U.S. national team legend, so do whatever you want, Eric. You've earned it.
It's important to note in situations like this, you know, we're as a fan base familiar with it, with McBride coming back and going to Chicago as I die. The number one thing in being a grown-up, okay, guys, if you want to take out scratch paper and a pencil, I'll give you time. The number one thing about being a grown-up is understanding dualities. You know, Guillermo going to Chicago makes me want to die. It makes me want to drink poison until I die from drinking poison. However, Guillermo owes us nothing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He's a human being who has wants and needs and a family, and if he thinks that Chicago, or you know, more specifically Bridgeview, is a good situation for his family in real life, then more power to him.
Yep.
He owes us nothing. He brought us a championship.
He's just trying to get fast-tracked into the circle of honor using the McBride method.
You know what? Actually, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
Him coaching in Bridgeview would give us an opportunity to finally put him in the frickin' circle of honor.
Exactly.
And you know...
You go to Chicago, you don't do well in Chicago, you lose to Columbus
Chicago
in a conference final, and then you get put in the circle of honor.
Chicago needs crew legends to win soccer games like the University of Michigan needs Ohio residents to win Heisman trophies.
Yes.
A couple things.
Science.
We're going to get so many tweets about that, by the way.
First of all, I think that the situation with McBride was a little bit different. McBride had a bunch of ties to the city of Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and so when he went back, it was totally understandable that, oh, okay.
Illinois
you're going
is
back
home.
To, yeah, you're going back to your hometown team. That's cool. Same reason when Eric Gehrig went back. Everybody was kind of like, yeah, that sucks, but at the same time, eh, it's okay. I think if Guillermo went back, I don't think that the reaction would be as good. And personally, the thing that would bug me the most is seeing crew fans who have kind of become soccer fans in the last few years just being like vehemently angry at Guillermo without having any of the memories of like the stuff that he did. That would get annoying. I don't think he's going to get the job, though. First of all, his English still sucks. Like, it is so bad.
Hello, Columbus.
Yeah, exactly. He was, like, trying to say 10 words, and it was painful. We love you, Guillermo, but, I mean, if you're going to be a coach in the U.S., you probably have to speak fluent English. Ivis Galarset put out an article earlier today where he said Tab Ramos is the preferred choice for Chicago. They've also interviewed Mike Petke, and they've also interviewed U.S. national team under-17 coach Richie Williams for the position. It's unclear what Jason Kreis's availability has to play in all of this stuff. It's a possibility, but I don't think that's where Kreis is going to end up. I think he's got better options available than that. You know, we'll see what happens. Nelson Rodriguez is kind of like the fix-it man for MLS. They sent him to Chivas and kind of like packed them up for...
they like kind of put everything in boxes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like got them ready for the slaughterhouse or whatever.
A show of hands, by the way, who here thinks that Guillermo and Brian Bliss will ever be in the same organization?
No,
ever again.
No,
I don't know how long Brian Bliss has in Chicago. Well, he has done a pretty terrible job at putting together a team. His job is to put together the squad for Chicago, and they have spent a boatload of money on DPs, and all of their DPs have been mediocre or bad. Yeah. So at a certain point, I'm not sure. You know, you're getting ready. You get rid of your coach first.
Who the hell did they have as a DP?
Yes.
They had Maloney, right? Or Sean Maloney or whatever his name is. They had a bunch of guys that they got from, like, the Premier League.
Yeah.
And they just were, like, halfway decent.
I mean, the
serviceable
last,
guys.
Like, mildly effective.
They were all, like, Irish, I think. Like, Irish and English and stuff. I'm probably being racist right now or something, but...
They were all just a bunch of Irish guys. The last effective DP that I remember Chicago having was Blanco.
I don't want to talk about Blanco.
No,
I'd rather
hate
talk
Blanco.
About
that's,
Maloney
that's
or whatever
Blanco
his name
to you now.
That's right. Oh, my God.
That's Mr. Mayor.
Oh, dear
Senor
God.
Mayor.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's the easiest way to...
Gilberto?
Gilberto? Yeah.
He's still on a DP level, isn't
yeah.
he, even though he's...
Yeah.
The easiest way to win an election, though, in any place is to give everybody a game-worn jersey.
Akam.
Yeah.
Sure. Akam's not a DP.
Yeah.
He is?
Yeah.
All right.
So last thing that I wanted to touch on was this whole match that we have going on against the Red Bulls.
Okay.
We're going to be playing at Monterey Stadium.
Yeah.
2 weeks from yesterday. Do we know the time yet?
5 o'clock.
5 o'clock. Okay, cool.
I have an announcement to make, Matt.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
So everybody who shows up to Hendox for these podcasts knows that I almost never drink when I come here. I always drink Red Bull. And... I am done with Red Bull until the end of the two legs. I have switched to Hendox Fountain generic Red Bull knockoff, Red Fuel.
Yeah.
Red Fuel. So,
it's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
Cheers to that. Forza Columbus, Red Fuel all the way.
Your pee is going to be green tomorrow.
It is disgusting.
It's
going to
be shaking.
It is genuinely one of the worst things I've ever tasted, but... Yeah. I believe it's caffeinated. Even the nice lady bartender at Hendox told me to that I should cut it with water because it's too strong. But I was just like, no, just give me straight Red Fuel.
So, I was surprised. I'm surprised you're
Columbus.
Not drinking red wine. I'm really surprised.
Well, Willie didn't have any free red wine for me today, so.
Well, Willie's in Hawaii.
I know.
So that's one of the reasons yeah. Willie didn't have anything.
Well, maybe
for
he'll
you
bring
today.
Me some back from Hawaii. I'll tweet him and ask him to bring me back wine.
Okay.
This is a great Jesus. Podcast.
This is an amazing podcast.
It always gets so strong at the
All right,
end.
Let's talk about the game.
Yeah, let's yes. talk about it. I am, and we were talking to Daniel Fierenstein from the Red Bull podcast, Fierenstein's Fire, earlier off the air. But he was asking me my thoughts on the match and the series in general. Red Bull did not look good in their series against DC. However, DC looked way worse. It's DC had two shots on frame in the entire series. Red Bull could only manage to score one goal in each game against DC, a team that we shellacked at the end of the season 5-0.
True.
DC was backed into the playoffs and really had no business even being in the playoffs, other than the fact that they had some good results at the beginning of the year. I think that, you know, Red Bull should have, as the Supporters' Shield winner, those two games should have been statement games for them, and they just weren't. And I really don't see. I was more nervous about the Montreal series than I am about this Red Bull series. Montreal had, I think, in their form of play right now, had a much better team, and I just don't see Red Bull being that quality or that caliber.
Yeah, well, before the playoffs started, I said that Red Bulls are one of the teams that I wanted to play. I think that their system matches up well with our system in a way that benefits us. I think that if we have a full strength squad, we're the better team. The big question mark for me is Gaston Saro suspended for the first leg. Mm-hmm. Which is a huge loss. With Gaston in there, our defense has looked so much better.
Yeah.
And it's going to be Wall and Parkhurst again, I'm assuming, which I think Wall is better than a lot of fans give him credit for. I don't think he's nowhere near the level of Gaston Saro, obviously. how they adjust with that, especially given the fact that Wall and Parkhurst have not played together as much, how they get that rhythm back, how they get that chemistry back, that's going to determine a lot of how we come out of there. Because if Red Bulls go in and they get a couple away goals, mm-hmm. and we have to go back to Red Bull Arena and chase the game, it's a much bigger ask. Jesse Marsh is very good about setting up his team defensively. You know, they might not score a heck of a lot of goals, but they're very good at preventing you from scoring goals. So if they can take advantage of Gaston Saro, we could be in some trouble. But, you know, there's something about this team, man. I don't know what it is. Before the season started, I predicted that we would make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, we would play the Red Bulls, and we would lose. Mm-hmm. I'm not feeling that way anymore. I think we can come away with a win from this, but Tyson Wall has got to step up. They have to adjust. And Will Trapp has got to stay as that third center back if we need him to make the job easier on Tyson and Michael.
I don't know how much I read into D.C. and New York. That's a rivalry that has played out many times in the history of our league, and it's always physical, and it's always boring, and it's always stupid and terrible. So I don't know how much I read into those dual 1-0 victories. It has to be said, the Red Bull New York have played a total of 3 minutes against Will Trapp this year in 3 games. He has been out every single game save for 3 minutes of the July 4th game, which was a 2-1 victory. We have a couple 2-1 losses in there. So I don't know. I agree with Alex. Going into the playoffs, I think we match up really well against New York. You know, I'm not scared of the Metro Stars. I really hope that, and it doesn't, end of the day, it doesn't matter what we think. I hope that the team, the Cruisers, are able to look at the victory against Montreal, which was huge. I mean, we're the only team that stopped Didier Drogba from scoring this season.
Yeah.
And we did it 2 games in a row. There's something to be said for that as well. I hope that they are excited about the outcome of the semifinals, and they quickly move on and are focused on the Metro Stars. And Tony Meola's a bitch. Back to you, Matt.
Greg. I agree with both of you guys in that I don't put any kind of stock in the previous results for either team, whether it was, you know, you look at, yeah, okay, Red Bulls only beat DC 1-0 and we beat them 5-0. That means nothing, especially in MLS and especially this year. It's a completely new set of – it's like golf tournaments. Throw out the form guide. You have no idea who's going to step up. For me, I think the thing that stands out is that these are two teams that match up very well, but they're very different style-wise. Crew are not known as a solid defensive team. Lately, they've had to be, and they've done it well. But I look at the way that they dealt with Didier Drogba and what they're going to have to do against Bradley Wright Phillips, who is kind of like Drogba, only faster, doesn't dive all the time, and finishes, particularly against us. So I worry. I especially worry with no Gaston in the lineup about this first leg.
I did think it's interesting. This is the first time, I think, in ever. Go ahead, Sam. I'm sorry if you had a...
New York Red Bulls has 4 players that are in yellow caution suspension that are sitting on 1 yellow. Columbus has 1. And that's Harrison Offal, not Gaston, since Gaston is going to be already out for that first game.
Yeah.
But New York is coming in with 4 major players that are on yellow caution possibility of suspension for the second leg.
Interesting.
Oh, my God.
Interesting. Their entire team is going to be suspended.
The thing that worries me about New York is Dax McCarty and Sasha Kljestan. I think those guys are really, really good. They're going to give our midfield problems, and it'll be extra important to get the ball wide. And so, like it was with this last game, you know, a lot of this is going to come down to, okay, how is Ethan Finley playing? Mm-hmm. How is Justin Merrin playing? How is Cedric Mbwati playing? On the basis of the last game, if Cedric is playing as well in training as he did in that game, I would start him over Justin on that left-hand side. And I'd play Mbwati and Finley. I know Berhalter likes to bring on his pace late and run him at tired legs, and that seems to have results. So I'm guessing that's what's going to happen. But I think he's earned a starting position if that's what he wants, which I'm assuming he does. I think he's earned a shot at being the main guy.
Olniak's old. They don't have a chance.
The one thing that I did want to point out, and I don't remember the last time this happened, but the game on the 22nd at Moffray Stadium on ESPN. I'm trying to remember the last time that the Crew have had back-to-back games on ESPN ever.
Oh, wait.
No.
Yeah.
No.
ESPN 2 count?
Eastern Conference semis in the MLS Cup.
MLS Cup was on ABC.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about San Jose? No, Kansas City.
The Kansas
Which
City
one was it?
Game. I don't remember
anyway,
if that was.
Oh,
on.
It was on ESPN 2, the conference final. So I guess it's semantics, Matt. Back.
Yeah,
to you.
I mean ESPN and ESPN 2 are both
the deuce.
Both national networks at this point.
The
so.
Deuce means poop, Matt.
When did we start talking about the Philly game? What happened?
Well, Alex.
He turned my mic off.
Turned
the mic
mics
off.
Got cut. The mics got cut.
I don't think we've ever talked about that.
Undo hate, Sam.
Yeah, I don't know. What are we talking about? Magic poopies, what?
Oh, dear God.
It's a hashtag. Some call it a movement, even.
So here's the thing. We have one
womp,
more
womp.
We have one more show to really, really break this game down.
Oh, we're going to go so in-depth.
So in-depth. So many hot takes.
Yeah.
All of the takes are going to be hot. But the one thing that I want to do between now and in the next game, you can tweet in. You can email Morgan.
Nope.
What's your work email, Morgan?
President at SpiceGirlsFanClub.com.
Perfect. You can show up to Morgan's work and drop off your well-written essay. Just come by the podcast next week. I want to hear from you guys your favorite memories of the season. I want to hear your favorite memories of the series against Montreal. And we're going to talk a little bit about that at the beginning of next week's podcast when we all have voices again.
Are we mentioning the fan exchange program tonight, or are we going to do that next week?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, so Sam, you're the one that's talking to people about this, so why don't you grab a microphone and...
Okay, so next week on the show, we're going to have Mark Fishkin from the Seeing Red podcast, good friend of the show. But there was apparently some sort of discussion that we just got involved in, and he said that it looks like Columbus hotels are packed out because of the Michigan State game the night before.
Yes.
Alex is nodding his head.
Yes.
And somebody who will remain nameless from Columbus, because we love them, suggested that maybe some Crew fans would be interested in hosting – calm down – in hosting a few, probably very, very few, possibly traveling fans of New York, and they would do vice versa. So I promised Mark that we would put this on the air. Please make your responses. This is more of a – I know there's fans and there's rivalries, but this is something that I'm doing over here for Massive Report. Mark is going to do it over there for Seeing Red if any of our fans – do decide to hop over to New York over Thanksgiving weekend and need a place to crash. So if you are going to respond, if you would like to host, please message us at massivereport@gmail.com. Please keep your responses appropriate. Stupid responses on social media will be deleted, just so you know.
The one thing that I do want to point out to any Red Bull fan that might be listening, I just looked this up on Priceline, the Super 8 on Dublin Granville Road. $44 a night.
Can't beat that.
And just make sure to bring a tarp.
A lot of people say 161 is the best part of Columbus, Matt. Yeah.
161 is it's a special neighborhood.
It's a better dish at El Vaquero than it is a street. Yeah.
And we've broken Matt.
Matt is choking on his own spit, everyone. How did Matt Gauscher die? Saliva. Oh, man.
I think that's the end of the podcast. We're going to call 911 for Matt.
For Matt Gauscher, for Morgan Hughes, for Alex Stanek, for Sam Fahmy. This has been another edition of the... Am I really doing this?
Yeah, do it.
My name is Matt Gauscher.
My name is not Matt Gauscher, but this has been another edition of the Massive Report. We will see you again next week.
My name is Matt Gauscher. Thanks for tuning in. Here's my quote for the night.
If I knew it was going to be that kind of party, Sam, I would have cleaned the blood off my clown costume.
Matt, I knew him well.